broadcasting on the internet and at 90.1 FM from high atop Burnaby Mountain. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM.
Hello and welcome to Cancria, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And thank you for joining me, Sebastian. I'm glad you made it.
Yes, me too. I am glad I made it to the internet.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we have a bit of a packed schedule for today's show. It's going to be there's definitely a fair few things going on in the LGBTQ world, as mm-hmm. it were. But before we dive into all things gay, mm-hmm. how was your week? How have you been?
I've been well, I suppose. I fell a little bit behind on work. I caught up a little bit on work. My gentleman friend has kindly requested me to grow a beard for his sake, which I hate, but I'm doing it for him because it makes him damp in the nether regions.
It is giving me, our listeners on the radio obviously can't see, but if I was to describe it, it's a split between unkempt and 70s adult cinema lead actor.
I have an uneven beard. It looks like a handlebar mustache with some scruff.
That's the vibe. Yeah, it's giving like you're working towards auditioning for the Village People.
Mm-hmm. Or something. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm tepid on it, but I'm doing it for his sake.
Yeah, I've grown. I usually keep my beard at a relatively similar length. I don't know why we're on beard talk today. For me, it's the opposite. If I'm completely clean shaven, then my gentleman friend does not appreciate that. But I quickly look like a wildebeest if it gets if it grows for too long. So these are the things that we deal with. Now, mm-hmm. first of all, we reached out to Global Affairs Canada and Minister Jolie's office. Mm-hmm. So we asked a whole bunch of questions to Global Affairs and the minister. They are working on a response. The reason why I stammered there is because they've just emailed me. We told them that the show goes live today at 4. We are now live mm-hmm. at 4. And mm-hmm. they've asked politely if we can extend our deadline to end of day tomorrow. So, I mean, the short answer is no, because we are currently live, currently talking about it. But we'll give them a bit longer.
It's like that one friend who steps into the shower at the time you're expecting them to show up at your house. And then when you leave without them, they're shocked and surprised and angry. Why didn't you wait for me?
Yeah.
We said 7:30 and you were an hour late. Yeah.
I get it. I've asked some government bureaucrats to have something ready in 6 hours. And, if anyone's worked with the government bureaucrats, that is a very tight turnaround. And, maybe it's not the most pressing media story out there. But later on today, we'll give them a little bit more time to respond to the questions that we had passed. But we will be talking about Canada's response to what has now been broadly billed as the most anti-gay law in the world that mm-hmm. has been passed in Uganda. I think we'll dive into it in just a bit because I don't want to kind of take the wind out of the sails, but give the government a bit of a minute to get their response together. But before then, I wanted to share with everybody that coming up this, I want to say Friday. Is it 31st Friday? Or is it Thursday?
I don't know. You tell me.
Let me just check that out.
We're adults. We know the answer to this.
Yeah, I think it's Thursday or Friday.
Okay. Okay.
No, it is Friday. My instinct, okay. I should have stuck with it. So this Friday is the Trans Day of Visibility. It's an international day. It's broadly celebrated by a whole bunch of agencies here in Canada, which aims to raise the profile on discrimination and harassment of trans folks that exist here in Canada. Obviously, being an international day, they spotlight it worldwide. Pride at Work, who we've interviewed their executive director a number of times, just once actually, we've interviewed them on being openly gay at work. But they issued a press release about Trans Day of Visibility. The key quote here I'll read is, regardless of gender identity, gender expression, and sexual orientation, everyone should have their work and lived experience valued, participating in the labor market with dignity and respect to achieve their full potential. One of the stats that they cite is that despite nearly 90% of trans people in Canada having a high level of education, more than half are earning $30,000 a year or less. Now, we've met quite a few older trans ladies in our work when we worked with the Auto Police Service separately, but same job. And they were always incredibly well-educated. University degrees up the wazoo. But struggling to make ends meet, struggling to find gainful employment. There's a whole myriad of reasons why caution on the front of, caution, but really is discrimination by employers afraid of increased insurance costs, through to discomfort around passing privilege and so on and so forth. There are a million reasons, and I think collectively it creates an environment where, as Pride at Work indicates, trans folks tend to be disproportionately at lower levels of income because of the result of this, lots of little bits of discrimination that, when collectively added up, have quite a significant impact. What is your experience there? Because I know that you've spoken with many of these folks over the years.
One of the more interesting conversations I had on the topic was with one lady who I will remain unnamed just because I'm going to mention her past, working with Stats Canada, if you know who I'm talking about, working as a demographer and a statistician with Stats Canada. One of the things that she pointed out was when you look at the data, and from her own personal experience and from speaking with other trans women, they tend to do much better in small to medium-sized companies than in corporations or working for the government, even though a lot of corporations and government have outreach programs and hiring practices and whatnot. And she said one of the main reasons is if there's any discomfort at work with being LGBT, or in her case specifically trans, it's a one-on-one conversation with the office, and most small businesses have something like 30 to 60 people there. That's not a lot of conversations to have. The other thing is that a lot of small businesses don't have large facilities, and a lot of them only have single-use bathrooms. So the bathroom issue is just off the table. So it's really interesting seeing the relationship between the LGBT community and corporation size. That you've got certain things like all of Canada's banks have very assertive outreach programs and diversity programs and pride organizations. But if you're working for, I don't know, like the Canadian branch of Google or something, and we do have Google offices here in Ottawa, it's mixed. Sometimes those big corporations are good. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes they have policies in place that are really just there for optics. They're not really well enforced. Smaller businesses do tend to be better environments in general. And a lot of that really just comes down to either smaller businesses very frequently have LGBT owners, or you can just have one-on-one conversations. But smaller businesses do have ceilings to them, so you could be a very good accountant and you can still never make more than $60,000 a year because you're at a small business. And that's your ceiling. So I think some of that is some of the lower than average income stuff is the ceiling is lowered because a lot of us do end up working at small companies. I work at a small company. And some of it is troubles finding gainful employment because people look at you and they just get nervous. So it's a complicated issue. So obviously there's going to be a complicated range of things that feed into why this is true.
Well, for anyone who maybe operates a small business and maybe has trans staff or may not know they have trans staff or are just looking to see how they can improve, Pride at Work Canada offers, get my my F's and my P's the right way around. They have a virtual program called the Thrive Program, which is really about developing leadership in trans, two-spirited, and queer folks. But they also provide webinars, e-learning, training, resources. Mm-hmm. And when we spoke to them, they were very, very well equipped, and mm-hmm. they speak the language of business, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you know, they talk about bottom line, they talk about mm-hmm. you know, SOPs, and actually I have a member of my board who consistently says SOPs, and every now and then I have to Google it to remember what an SOP is, because it's in the world of nonprofits mm-hmm. it's not as ubiquitous as you know one may find. But I think this transitions quite nicely to another story I wanted to talk about that features Canadian businesses. Now, for the first time ever, it's first of its kind, according to some coverage by pinknews.co.uk, the Canadian Chamber, the Canada's LGBTQ Chamber of Commerce, the CGLCC, as well as Out Britain, which is a chamber of commerce for British LGBT organizations, they had a joint trade mission event in the UK to really kind of foster building those import-export relationships between Canadian businesses that are gay-owned or allied, looking for a diversity in suppliers, and then the British ones of the same ilk. Now, Daryl Sherman, the CEO and co-founder of the Canadian Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce, is quoted as saying, and I'll quote here, "This is a historic moment for Canada's LGBTQ businesses, and we are proud to be promoting and supporting their growth internationally." The British guy said much the same thing, as you would expect. But what I found quite interesting, and that relates here, is some of the stats that the CGLCC indicated, the Canadian Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce, and that is that there are over 100,000 LGBTQ-owned businesses in Canada that generate over $22 billion in annual revenue. Like, that's a lot of gay businesses.
Well, this is something, okay, this is not queer news. This is just small business news. I grew up in a family where almost everyone in my family worked for a small business. It has always annoyed me that when you talk about politics, people always look at large corporations when something, I don't remember the stats, it changes year by year, but it's something like a third to a quarter of Canadians work for small businesses. The collective economic force of all the small businesses in Canada almost outstrips the corporate forces. I think government, education, and healthcare are like our biggest competitors in terms of number of employers and employees, I should say. But yeah, small businesses are huge and they're really underestimated. If they got together into a unified chamber of commerce, like, watch out, Canadian government, they could really throw their weight behind stuff. But yeah, I mean, that does kind of follow nicely from what I said earlier about just the sheer volume of small businesses out there. And when you're saying small businesses, bear in mind, if you have an accountant who just works independently, isn't part of a firm, and they're at home, that is a small business of one owner and one employee. You have that I cannot remember the term, the
sole proprietorship.
That's it, sole proprietorship. So you're also including things like lawyers and consultants and interior decorators and
well, if we're including interior decorators, then that certainly drives up the list. Actually, last week, was it last week or the week before?
I was going to say landscaping as well. But,
yeah, we were talking about occupations that are disproportionately gay, and a lot of those do lend themselves to independent contractors or small businesses.
Sole proprietorship, yeah.
But
yeah.
It's not all, you know, pride parades and rainbows. They provide some additional details. 1 in 5 LGBTQ-owned businesses face challenges abroad due to being a part of the community, according to the Canadian Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce, as well as 1 in 3 gay-owned businesses having purposefully hidden their LGBTQ status to be able to create business abroad. 1 in 3 have faced discrimination for being LGBTQ. 1 in 4 have lost contracts due to being LGBTQ owned. And 1 in 5 find it difficult to access mentorship and coaching. Overall, they say LGBTQ businesses are underrepresented in global trade. Quite exciting to see that they were able to have a trade mission go to the UK. The parliamentary secretary and one of the openly gay members of parliament, the Honourable Rob Oliphant, the parliamentary secretary for foreign affairs, Liberal MP, attended the event and spoke to it, very much encouraging more trade and business, as you would expect in that case. But yeah, I think this is pleasant news, and we don't quite get enough of that. So I very much took the opportunity to make sure that we are including some pleasant news in today's show.
Also buried in this article, because actually I read a few articles on this. Buried in one of these articles, I can't remember which one, they kind of mentioned that one of the reasons why they were doing this is they're getting ahead of the curve, that Canada and the UK are reviewing our trade agreements, and apparently free trade is on the table as a possibility. And my brain was just like, what? Like, you're going to bury that? That's big news, and you're burying that in this article? But anyway.
Well, I mean, it's for anyone who's been keeping an eye, ever since Brexit, the British government has been looking to increase its global trade relationships, and Canada is on the list. They had a great deal with Australia recently, so they're certainly working on it. But trade deals are measured in decades; they're not measured measured in years. Yeah. We're going to jump to a track that's not Canadian, and the reason why it's not Canadian is because I have an unhealthy obsession with Eurovision.
Please tell me this is Moldova.
No, this is not Moldova. This is Evidemment by Lazara, the French entry. And as you know, the French deliver every Eurovision. The French are always a highlight. They always only sing in French because they are France. The rest of Europe splits it between English. You get maybe 3 or 4 that sing in their indigenous language that nobody knows, except obviously that country. But the French insist on French every time because it is the way of the French.
And, but we have learned that Azerbaijani house music is actually really dank beats.
It is. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. But I wanted to, in the run up to the Eurovision semifinals and final, we tend to play a little bit of some Eurovision. Now, May Muller, who is the artist being put forward by the UK, it is being hosted in Liverpool, in the UK, the United Kingdom, this year. I forget exactly when it is in May. Maybe you can look that up as I speak. It's being held in Liverpool. The contest was won by the Ukraine last year. However, when Russia illegally invaded and, continues to drop bombs on the Ukraine to this day, it's not really an ideal environment for hosting an international singing competition. So the UK is hosting it as they came second. And it'll be hosted in Liverpool. But May Muller, you probably don't recognize her, but she has a connection to Mika.
Lazara, the singer, is actually from Montreal originally. Technically, this is Canadian content.
Oh, is it? Well, I doubt the song counts as Canadian content, you know, when we consider the MAPL rules. But it's May Muller. Well, you may recognize it because in the song Grace Kelly, where the kid goes, "Hey, what you doing?" like that in the background, that's her.
Now, oh my God.
Now she's all grown up and the British entry to Eurovision. But we're not listening to her because that song is actually relatively boring. But Evidemment by Lazara is not boring. Lazara from Montreal is what we learned today. And we will be back just after this. I'm going to mute you though, Seb, and then we'll be back just after this.
Mon cœur, mes mains, mes yeux, mes reins, plus rien ne m'appartient. Je me fais du mal pour faire du bien. J'oublie comme si ce n'était rien. Dans mon jardin d'enfer poussent des fleurs que j'arrose de mes rêves, de mes pleurs. On a beau être sur le toit du monde, on ne peut toucher le ciel de doigts. Évidemment, toutes ces belles promesses que j'entends, ce n'est que du vent. Évidemment, car après le beau temps vient la pluie, c'est ce qu'on oublie. C'est toujours trop beau pour être vrai, mais ce n'est jamais trop. Demain, je rachète hier, le temps est assassin. Je cherche l'amour, je ne trouve rien, comme dans mon sac à main. Dans ma tête, ce n'est pas tant évident, je cherche la vérité. Chanter la grande France. C'est toujours faux pour être vrai, mais c'est jamais trop laid pour être faux. Évidemment, elle ne sera plus jamais la même, cette fille d'avant. Évidemment.
Hello and welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. I don't know why I'm not hearing. Oh, there we go. I turned you down and I turned you back up again. These things happen. All right. So that was Evidemment by Lazara, and we actually have some Canadian musicians, openly queer identified Canadian musicians, coming up later in the show. Mishi and the Hyenas, two separate bands there with two of their latest tracks coming up to the show as we move forward. Now, I did, during the song break there, issue a quick response to Global Affairs Canada, who were asking for a little bit more time. We don't know whether or not we're going to see details from that. But here is why we ask them a series of questions. So I'll start it off with what I asked them. The Ugandan Parliament this past week.
Yeah, let's start with the news. Yeah,
with the actual news story, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So the Ugandan Parliament this week have passed what is being billed as the most anti-gay law in the world, which is quite, you know, which is actually quite the achievement, you know, for that to be the case. It is extensive. It got to the point where two members, I think it was like 360, the vast majority of Ugandan parliamentarians voted in favor of it. However, two of the Ugandan parliamentarians of the political party in power, so I think two of the 389 legislators, voted against it, noting, and I think there's a great quote here from Odoi Oyelowo. He says, the bill is ill-conceived. It contains provisions that are unconstitutional, reverses the gains registered in the fight against gender-based violence, and criminalizes individuals instead of the conduct that contravenes all known legal norms. The bill doesn't introduce any valuable addition to the statute book and available legislative framework. Now, Uganda famously introduced a very anti-gay bill in, I want to say, 2013, which was eventually struck down by their courts for being unconstitutional. It is possible that this egregious bill will also be struck down in the Ugandan courts for being unconstitutional. The approach that many people are taking is the hope that the Ugandan president, Mulvani, will not give assent, will not sign the bill, bringing it into law. However, recent statements by the president of Uganda indicate that he is pretty much very much in favor of this law. So that's not a likely scenario that we're going to see. What the law does is it does many, many things. But one of the things that it does... Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking here at the wrong thing entirely. It increases the punishments that are already in place. So homosexuality is already... homosexual acts are already illegal in Uganda. But now they are illegal to the point of life sentences. And anyone who has does a homosexual act as defined by the Ugandan law and has HIV is now going to be convicted of aggravated homosexuality, which is a great phrase, and that could include up to the death sentence. Now, bearing in mind that HIV transmission and rates is pretty high in Uganda on accounts of the testing and treatment not being readily and easily available, also from the climate that is highly, highly abrasive towards LGBT folks, the care and ability to provide HIV care is not there. So anyone who is caught during a homosexual act, who is then tested and identified as having HIV, could be given the death sentence as a aggravated homosexual act. A life sentence for just sexual acts, but also it has very, very broad, vague terminology that includes prison sentences and fines for promoting homosexuality and normalizing homosexuality. So, for example, if you were walking down the street and holding hands, that would be normalizing homosexuality, and you could be sentenced to jail for that particular act. It's essentially legislating away the existence of being gay in Uganda.
To a certain degree, they've even made it, there's a jail time, I think it's 10 years, just for identifying as LGBT, and or with the provision that other people can report you as well. So other people can report you for being gay, and it's already turning into a nationwide blackmail scheme, apparently. Yeah. There's already reports coming in of people calling others and saying, give me money or I'll report to the police that you're gay, or that you said a thing, or that you confided in me in something in secret. Like, it's really not going as planned, although I have no idea what their plan is.
But even laying low, maybe being a little bit secret, maybe knowing that your brother or your sister or your parents or what have you, maybe knowing that they're gay, Not outing them to the police can land you with 5 years in jail. So there is a duty to report in the legislation, and anyone who does not report could face jail time. So if a particularly vindictive community is aware that one person is gay, they can target everyone around them, as well as the gay person, under this new legislation. It is absolutely obscene. Justin Trudeau was asked about it at Question Time last Wednesday.